Que merda. Pisse-moi.
Jean hacked into LaRue's head and chest with a blade, repeatedly stabbing and chopping about his neck, until the blade was slick with blood. LaRue was dead after the first half dozen blows, but the Baron continued hacking until he was soaked in the dead man's blood.
Whew! Thank you, Diamond. I appear to have made a terrible mess here. Get it all cleaned up, won't you? But first, I think we have something to attend to.
Dark night. Sounds like there's already a full-scale firefight going on.
If there is, then who are they fighting? I don't know about you, but I counted them all out.
Only one way we're gonna find out. We've gotta follow the sound of the firefight.
Follow the drums. How appropriate.
I think I see what you mean, Doc, but now really isn't the time for any philosophy.
At an indication from Ryan, they moved out of cover and began to progress stealthily along the roads that crisscrossed the old suburb, cutting across ruined buildings to keep cover and save time as they sought the source of the gunfire. They hadn't let up their pace since leaving the swamp settlement that morning. Keeping close on the trail of the guerrilla army, they had soon worked out that speed was Jack's priority. He had taken a direct route and hadn't stopped along the way, so neither had the companions. It was imperative that they catch the rebels before they entered the walled ville. They were still in the swamp when the Sect Patrol emerged for their nightly route. The companions had taken shelter in the undergrowth and watched as the vehicles rolled past. After they had, Ryan signaled that they should proceed. They made their way through to the edge of the bayou and across into the remains of the old suburb with no problems, and paused only when they heard the sounds of a distant firefight.
Which way, JB?
JB indicated to the northwest, across a row of half-demolished apartments and past the remains of the old hotel they had searched during their first visit to the suburb some years before.
I'd say it's coming from over there, which makes me certain that it must be Jack's people.
Why are you certain?
Because it's on the way to the walled part of Lafayette, and is probably the route they would take. Am I right?
That's the way I figure it.
Then perhaps we should make haste and assist our friend and his comrades in their endeavor.
I was just about to say that, Doc. Keep in cover. They might not think to ask who we are before firing on us if we sneak up on them too quickly.
Using the cover of the buildings, they headed toward the source of the noise. There obviously had to be two parties in the firefight, and if the Sect convoy had already left the old ville, that meant there was at least one squad roaming free in the ruins. The trouble was, they knew that Jack's plan would be to hit fast. The surprise element was almost certain to be removed now that this firefight had broken out. But as suddenly as the firefight had begun, silence now fell over the ruined suburb.
Maybe they've overcome the Sect Patrol. They probably had the numbers.
We need them firing to pinpoint where they are. How are we going to find them now?
We know where they're headed. If we head off that way, then we should be able to head them off before they reach that sewer outlet you mentioned.
Yeah, that should... What's that?
As they watched, LaRue ran past them. Doc stepped forward to leave the shelter of the lobby and hail the man. Ryan held out a restraining hand.
Why is he running? Who's chasing him?
There was no other sound than that of the bald swamp rebel as he ran, his footsteps and labored breathing getting farther away with each second.
I don't get it. If there's no one chasing him, then why is he running like that?
Yeah. Is he running to find the others or away from where they were? Either way, it can't be good to have him running around loose.
Let's get after him and try to find out what the hell's going on.
Keeping close to the walls of the ruined buildings, with an escape route to cover only a few steps away at any given moment, they slipped out of the ruined lobby and chased after LaRue. He had turned left at the corner, and JB hoped that the left turn didn't lead to a junction with five separate roads leading off. The road that turned left was straight for about 100 yards, yet there was no sign of LaRue.
Where is he gone?
About 100 yards ahead, LaRue was breaking through the rubble wherever possible, as though he had a definite goal. Maybe he did. The companions would have to catch him to find out. They set off after the fleeing man, trying to keep up. It was difficult, as the building he had chosen was littered with treacherous debris that moved underfoot, threatening to twist and disable ankles with one wrong step. They had to move around it and work out where LaRue had run to. It was only when he became briefly visible exiting the ruins that they were able to determine his direction. Setting off in his wake, they came to the rear of the building as LaRue was breaking for the far corner of the street, heading toward the walled ville. Ryan stayed the others with an arm.
Listen.
Sounds like a wag, and coming fast.
It was a wag. A second one responding to the radio call of the malfunctioning truck that the rebels had attacked. As the companions watched, they could see LaRue run blindly toward it. He cut across the corner of the road and ran directly in front of the wag. At the last minute, his instincts, blunted as they were by his fear, took over, and he noticed the vehicle racing toward him. He tried to pull back, stumbled, and fell backward. The wag clipped him, and he hit the ruptured tarmac and broken concrete with a sickening thud. The set crew were out of the wagon an instant, surrounding him.
We can take them. There's only four of them, and we've got surprise.
No, it's too late for that. By the time we reach them, they could already have raised a warning.
But we can't let them take him.
We'll have to. We've got to think of the bigger picture. We tell Jack and his army that Dr. Jean knows about them. Then we can help them get another plan. If we go after LaRue, then maybe we lose more lives in the long run.
Mildred glared at Ryan. She looked to Christy and Doc for support, and in truth, she knew that he was right. But she didn't have to like it. The noise cut through the hubbub of the neon-lit city and caused the people on the streets to look up. In every building, the factories in which the workers toiled on the weapons and old tech that Dr. Jean was seeking to develop, the brothels that served the workforce, the bars that fed them liquor laced with powerful narcotics, the trading posts that sold clothing, blasters, and food, there were vid screens that were permanently broadcasting. The face of the Baron appeared on the screen.
In 2 nights' time, I plan to mount a raid on the last remaining scum that stood between ourselves and the complete domination of the Bayou. A small, insignificant number of people, they had nonetheless succeeded in hiding themselves away. In much the same way, they had made themselves an irritant on the skin of our glorious regime. So, much as you would lance a boil, I had decided to rid us of this irritation. Having located the sickness, it was time to burn it out. Yet, with an audacity that even I find breathtaking, they have decided to attack our build this very night. They have a childish and simple plan, using the sewers to gain access under the walls. An appropriate manner for filth to enter our city. And why, you may wonder, do I not just send a force into the area beyond the walls and wipe them from the face of the earth?
Dr. Jean smiled. To anyone under his spell, it would have seemed the mark of a benevolent leader. But for anyone else, there was a cold malice there.
Because, my people, I feel that it would be a fine opportunity for you to show your love and loyalty to me by dealing with them yourselves. I shall tell you where they will enter our ville, and you will mobilize and defend your own quarters in case of attack. Look on it as an exercise in how well you can work together. Strength through unity, my friends, that is the key. Be ready. Those of you who live on Fifth and Vine, in the backyard of Dormitory 7, there is a cover over the sewer. It is in this yard that the intruders shall emerge. I will be sending you a detail of sentries to assist you in the eradication of the rebel army. I want them chilled straight away. Do not waste time on them. But there are those I wish to be made an example of and offered as a sacrifice to the gods who guide us. We must all work together on this. I have faith in my people, for they are as one. That is all.
The screens went blank for a second before the regular broadcasts returned, but the atmosphere in the ville had changed. It was now charged with an edge of anticipation for the fight ahead. Dr. Jean sat back in his chair. He reclined behind what had once been the news desk of the local Lafayette cable news channel. The equipment within had somehow survived the new cost unscathed and had been ignored by looters as it held no interest for them. But it had held an immense interest for Dr. Jean. He had enough knowledge of old tech and access to equipment and enclaves he had discovered during his time in the wilderness hiding from those who sought revenge against anyone associated with Baron Termal, to know that he could get this old tech studio working again, and use the cable lines to set up vid screens in every building and on every street corner. There would be no escape from the influence of Dr. Jean. And it was at times like this that he felt proudest of his achievements. That had been Termal's trouble, and something from which Jean had learned. Keeping a population in its place with terror was effective, but a sure way of building long-term resentment, as well as needlessly expending a vast amount of manpower. Dr. Jean had no plans for making the same mistake. He used propaganda, used the old tech to feed them a constant diet that told them how lucky they were to live in Lafayette, how they could only prosper with such a leader at the helm. How much he did for them. And indeed, in many ways, he could be said to have furnished them with a relatively comfortable life within the walls of his Lafayette, but at a cost. But now was time for action. Dr. Jean hauled himself out of the chair, ignoring the lackeys who operated his equipment, and beckoned to the sec man who had been with him when he killed LaRue. The scarred man approached him cautiously. He was Dr. Jean's security chief, and had worked closely with him since the beginning.
Sir, walk with me, Damon.
Dr. Jean was always at his most dangerous when his tone was that mild, and as the stocky security chief fell in beside the Baron, he felt the apprehension tighten in his chest. The two men set out for the Baron's chambers, which were two blocks from the old studio. As they walked through the streets, those they passed fell to their knees and sang praises for the ebony giant, who barely acknowledged their presence. Some came up to him, seemingly just for the privilege of touching his cloak. He pushed them away and they fell to the ground, writhing in an ecstasy that would in pre-dark days have been called evangelical. Even to be manhandled by the Baron was a joy. He had touched them. That was enough. It always sent a ripple of fear through Diamond, the sec chief, to see this happen. Everyone was armed, and the Baron took no precautions. Before Diamond could have had a chance to draw his blaster, the Baron could have been killed. Yet the people were totally in his thrall. The Baron could do anything. Dr. Jean didn't speak to Diamond for the whole of the two blocks. Despite his limp, the Baron moved swiftly, with long strides that had a rolling, irregular rhythm to them. Perhaps he was just concentrating on this. Perhaps he had something to impart that he wanted no one else to hear. They ascended the stairs in the block where the Baron had his throne room, past the sec guards on each level, and past the torture suite. The body of LaRue had been removed, and three women with buckets and brushes were scrubbing the blood from the floors and walls. Dr. Jean didn't speak until they were in the throne room alone. He slumped into the large wooden seat and rested his forehead in one vast palm.
They have played into my hands, perhaps made it easy for me, yet I know I will not be happy until the task is completed.
Diamond said nothing, knowing from past experience that all speech from the Baron was rhetorical.
Hidden away in the swamp, they've been nearly impossible to find, and a thorn in my paw for too long. They've made it easy to take them, coming right out into the open. At the same time, they've given me a chance to show the people what they can do if they pull together. That much is fine. I want you to send our best fighters to the location the coward told us about. I want 20 men with enough blasters to take out 5 times that many. I want whoever is leading this arrogant little party to be spared, if possible. I have plans for them. Remember, Diamond, take no chances.
Sir?
Dr. Jean could see the confusion in his chief's face.
You are wondering why I want a sentry force to get there first and not allow the people to do their jobs, especially as I made great play of telling them that this was to be their chance to prove themselves. They love me, Diamond, because I tell them to, because I give them jolt and guide their thoughts and actions, because I give them food and shelter. Yes, I work them hard, but they are rewarded for it. The problem, my friend, is that they do not fight, and the food they eat is diseased. No matter how much we try, this accursed bayou is full of disease that eats at their strength. And then there's the pox brought in by those gaudy sluts we have traded for. Oh, now they do their jobs, but they spread pox sores with every client.
The people we have here are debilitated by their lives. When I get beyond the bayou, I will have strong people. Whores clean of disease, food that is pure. And yes, these people will come with me. Well, some of them, those that survive. But not yet, and not now. I tell you, Diamond, I know these people would chill each other if I asked them. They would try to chill the damn swamp scum. But I cannot be sure of them, because the food and sex that helps bind them to me also makes them weak. You do not send children to do a man's job. They are children, your soldiers. Now, they are real men. Now, do you understand?
Diamond looked into the eyes of the Baron. There was a darkness in the pits of his eyes that chilled the chief to the bone. He hadn't understood more than every other word, and yet he nodded eagerly, not wanting to anger his Baron.
Of course you don't. Just go and do as I say, Diamond.
Dr. Jean rose from his throne to look out over the ville. He let the drape cover the window, leaving him alone in the candlelit throne room. Alone as ever. Shaking his head, he limped across the room to where he kept his ceremonial sword. When the rebel leaders were brought to him, there would be work to be done. Beside the sword was a bowl of off-white powder, streaked with yellow. It was a refined version of the drug he fed to his people, more pure and stronger than anything they had known. He laid out two lines. Shaking his head, he began to finger the razor-honed blade of the ceremonial sword, smiling to himself. There was work to be done, work he would enjoy. The rebel army made rapid progress from the site of their firefight to the point where they would gain access to the sewers, and thus into the walled ville. There had been nothing to stop them. The failure to locate LaRue had been cause for concern, but Jack had opted to ignore his disappearance and press on.